opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Good day, everyone. Welcome again to another edition of Boomer Generation Radio. This is your host, Richard Address, coming to you from the beautiful studios of WWDB AM 860 here in the Delaware Valley and streaming live on WWDBAM.com. Boomer Generation Radio brought to you by Kendall Corporation, a system of not-for-profit communities and services that advocate for and empower older adults to reach their full potential. Kendall is committed to working with others to together transform the experience of aging. And to learn more about Kendall, that's K-E-N-D-A-L, we invite you to visit www.discoverkendall.org or call toll-free at 888-759-0128. That's discoverkendall.org, 888-759-0128. And a reminder that if you want to contact us here at Boomer Generation Radio, the email address boomergenerationradio@gmail.com. And we are very, very honored to welcome to the microphones this morning on this beautiful day here in the Delaware Valley, Barbara Scherf from Capture Life Stories here in Philadelphia in the Delaware Valley. Welcome. Welcome to Boomer Generation Radio. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
You come from a background of storytelling and public relations and radio and communications, and you write for the Chestnut Hill Local, and you do teaching and classes and coaching and public relations. So you've been involved, I guess, truly all your professional life, and truly all your life with stories. And I just want to start right away with this whole Capture Life Stories idea, since the idea of telling one's story is becoming so important, especially for baby boomers, and this idea of legacy, what do we want to leave behind? And your particular entry in this, if I'm not mistaken, as we talked, the Woodstown Rodeo and your dad. Tell me that story real fast.
Sure. Dad and I would ride horses together, and I would capture his stories. And on one particular occasion, I asked him what the happiest day of his life was. And I'm thinking marriage, birth of one of his four children. The happiest day of his life was when he, during the Depression, had saved $75, took it to Ray Hinkson's Dude Ranch. I still have the receipt, in Camden, New Jersey. Spent $75 for his first horse. It was a one-eyed horse named Paint. Didn't even have $5 left for the saddle, and rode back home to Maple Shade, New Jersey, bareback.
The fact that there was a dude ranch in Camden, New Jersey alone makes the story worthwhile. I mean, who would have thunk it, you know, a dude ranch in Camden, New Jersey.
And the story gets better in that he got that money because he picked tomatoes on the farm during the week for Campbell's Soup Company.
This is during the Depression.
During the Depression, would tote them again to Camden, New Jersey by horse, by carriage. So he would gain money that way, but he also rode in local rodeos, Sally Starr's Rodeo, Cowtown Rodeo, all these little rodeos. And he would tell me stories about making more money riding a bull for 8 seconds on a Saturday night than he did all week picking the tomatoes. Yeah, he'd get 20, sometimes even more, dollars riding that bull for 8 seconds. And the blood and the sweat of picking those tomatoes. So that's how he saved that money for his first horse.
So this started you on the creation of Capture Life Stories, right?
It was originally intended to be an internal project for our family. I wrote a book. Mm-hmm. It was given to everybody at his 80th birthday party. It's like a party favor. He signed copies. I signed copies. He went around South Jersey, where he was living at the time, doing book signings and readings. I started doing workshops, and lo and behold, a business was born.
One thing led to another. Mm-hmm. So what is Capture Life Stories?
Well, it's exactly what it says. It's sitting down with whomever. I've done it with a 13-year-old for a bat mitzvah, mm-hmm. and I've done it with a 92-year-old. So it's sitting down, and it's capturing the living history. So it's not the genealogy per se.
Right.
We do get into that a bit, But that's a whole different ball game.
So is this a videotape? Is it a slideshow? Is it a printed book? Is it all of the above?
It can be all of the above. It can start in print, as Lula's story did, and morph into a video. It can be audio. It can be a slideshow. It can be whatever the budget or the person feels comfortable with. Not everybody wants a video of themselves in later in life, and they want those memories from the happier times and the earlier times. So then we do a voiceover, and we do some photos and some old home videos, actually.
Does the majority of this come for people who, you know, want to, this is this legacy thing again, and they just want to leave something behind, some visual type of thing, or is it something, you're shaking your head, no, so what is it?
No, it's really for people as a celebration of their life here and now, and to share those stories with their family, and to open up the communication within the family prior to the passing.
So it's not a death event. It's really a life event.
It's a life event. It's a celebration. I did the video for my dad's 85th birthday last November. And it was, we played it. Everybody came to the party. It was all of his fabulous stories about getting in trouble on the farm and the dude ranch. And so it was a celebration of his life.
So if somebody wants to pursue this, obviously there's a way to get in touch with you, and that is?
Absolutely. I have a website called CaptureLifeStories.com, and then email is CaptureLifeStories@gmail.com. And I absolutely love picking up the old-fashioned phone, and that's 215-990-9317. And if you confer with me, I will go through, and I'll do this complimentary to your listeners, a legacy plan. And what that is, it's a 4-page survey, and I ask particular questions. What do you have? How organized are your photos? What memories? Did you keep journals somewhere along the way? And so I go through, and then I kind of go back and say, this is where I see this project going.
So you do workshops. You mentioned workshops. So you're doing, you're doing something.
I'm doing something Thursday at 1 o'clock in Chestnut Hill. It's 18th. Called As You Wish, Thoughts for Tomorrow. Yes, Thursday. And it's writing your obituary, an ethical will, or family love letter. I've written my family a love letter. I actually had included it with my will, but at this point I'm starting to share it with my niece for her 21st birthday. I used the template and shared particular pieces of what I've learned on this planet with her for that milestone. So it's writing the details of your obituary. We use the Obit Kit, A Guide to Celebrating Your Life by Susan Soper, and we put the details of your life on paper.
We're talking with Barbara Scherf, the developer, head of Capture Life Stories. And again, it's CaptureLifeStories.com, right? Boomer Generation Radio here on WWDB AM 860 in Philadelphia, Greater Philadelphia, and streaming live on WWDBAM.com. You have this very lovely brochure that you've showed me here in the studio about CaptureLifeStories.com. I have to ask you, pets. You've had experience of doing capturing life stories of a pet. You have to walk me through that. Because I know pets have, for families, a very, very powerful hold on them. And they really are like one of the, well, they are family. They are family.
So absolutely.
Tell me a story about the story of a pet.
Sure. So this is an article that I did in November 2010 when our golden retriever that we rescued passed away. And as a closure for me, I decided to write an article for our local newspaper. And it starts from his perspective. Hey there, my name is Simba. I turned 10 on 10-10-10. But left this world passing over the Rainbow Bridge less than a month later. I know it was all very sudden as that nasty tumor in my tummy burst, but who knew? I just wanted to let you know that I was not in much pain, and I'm glad I didn't linger for days or weeks because this new place is really, really cool.
So you also do the video? I mean, the same thing with pets, right?
Absolutely. I try to get into their mind and find out what's important to them, if it's the ball, if it's rides, if it's running, it's whatever's important to them. And then we follow them in a video and actually capture
their
legacy.
Have you done more pets than people?
I've done more people than pets, but I'd like to do more pets. I'd actually like to do a horse at some point. If there's anybody out there who has a horse story, I'd love to do a horse right now.
Oh,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, my passion is horses, and I'd love to do a horse.
But you shared that with your dad, right?
I did.
Yeah.
I shared that for 5 glorious years. We had the luxury of riding in the Wissahickon Valley, and he would tell me his stories. And I kept saying, Dad, write them down. Write them down. These are fabulous. And it wasn't until I found some worksheets off the internet, and I've since developed my own and sent him off to Florida. And I said, Dad, I don't want to see you back until you've completed these worksheets. Hmm. And that's when he came back.
That's
he gave me the pictures.
Right.
He dumped them in my lap, and I was like, oh, now what am I going to do with it? And I felt an obligation to do something with it because he had done what I had asked him to do. And so it was on me to follow up.
Who needs the guilt, right?
Yeah, who needs the guilt? I've got enough guilt.
That's right. You had to do it.
We all do.
We're talking with Barbara Scherf here on Boomer Generation Radio on Capture Life Stories, brought to you by the Kendall Corporation. And specifically at this point, Kendall Outreach, which serves the field of aging by raising public awareness and advocacy around the important issues dealing with older adults. Kendall Outreach does this through education and training and comprehensive, safe, and individualized long-term care practices. And Kendall Outreach has been sharing Kendall's outreach to quality care with consumers, advocates, providers, government agencies, and related organizations since 1989. And to learn more, visit kendall.org. That's K-E-N-D-A-L.org. And click on Outreach. Barbara, have you found why are so many people more reluctant to tell their stories? Or are you finding an increased desire perhaps on the part of baby boomers to say, no, I do want my story told?
I think there's reluctance because nobody wants to think we're going to die. And they see this as a process of, oh my gosh, if I do this, what's the next step? And it's really not about that. It's capturing your living history for your children, your grandchildren, your siblings, for whoever it is. But there is a reluctance. And you know, in this economy, people are, you know, people my age in the sandwich generation are worried about buying tires for mom's car as opposed to doing this.
Right.
So that's part of the issue. And part of it is people don't think they have a story. And I think that everybody has a story. And when I sit with somebody like Lula, I will say, you don't have to tell me your entire story, and you get to edit your story. Okay, so what comes out in print and what comes out as the final product in DVD can absolutely be edited. You have the last word. And I think that that's somewhat of a reluctance.
So this is it's a fascinating and very private and personal journey that you take with somebody. I would imagine it spans a whole variety of emotions. So you mentioned Lula's story.
Mm-hmm.
So and when we talked about this a little bit before the show, it's a fascinating journey that you went on with this woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's indicative of what Capture Life Stories is about. So share with us Lula's story.
The power of Lula's story. Lula Pidcock Moore. Pidcock, the first white settlers in Bucks County. They came over with William Penn. There's a creek named in Washington Crossing. So I sit down with Lula and about an hour and a half, and I'm not able to get a lot of her stories. She's 92. Her memories have faded. And at the end of the session, the granddaughter says, would it be helpful if you had the journals? And I said, absolutely. So I went through, and I was able to prompt her stories. What came out was a 10-page, fully designed booklet with her family history and her journals and all of these places in Bucks County. And it was given to her at her 93rd birthday. After the party, I heard her grandchildren come up and say, Gammy, I didn't know that about you. So it opened up the communication. So I thought the project was done, and several months later, the son, Bob Moore, calls me and says, Lula's stepbrother, who's 20 years younger, is coming in from California. It may be the last time that he sees her, and would you videotape their trip to the old haunts in Bucks County? Absolutely. Did that. Put the video together. Everybody was happy. It was, they didn't spend money on gifts that holiday season. They put it into the video project because it's a gift that gave to the entire family. And I thought the project was over. Get a call from Bob. Mom's in hospice. Go to see her. He has a big screen TV and a looped version of the video in her room. And she would not allow anybody to turn it off or turn it down for 48 hours prior to her passing. It was closure for her. It was a confirmation of her life, and it introduced the staff to what her story was. Story doesn't end there. I get a call. Lula has passed. I go to set up the video at the memorial luncheon. Everything takes about 2 minutes. I thought there would be technical problems, so I go over to the memorial cemetery. I'm standing graveside, and the minister gets up and says, I didn't know Lula Pidcock Moore, and I wish I had. However, I felt like I did know her. My wife and I read through her booklet, and we went to the website, my website, last night and watched her video, her 26-minute video. And but for the grace of that, I would not be able to do a proper eulogy here today. And kudos to the family and to the person who put this together, because this is her legacy. Of course, he didn't know I was in the audience, and I'm getting goosebumps right now telling that story. But that's the power. That's the power of this.
Stories, you know, you go through the Bible, you go through classic literature. There seem to be paradigms, stories, the power of a story. Anybody who teaches knows the power of teaching through telling a story. Certainly clergy people, you know, we are constantly on the hunt for good stories to throw into a sermon or a teaching because it grabs somebody's attention. We see each other, we see ourselves in those stories, correct?
Absolutely. You
know? So in Lula's story, somebody probably said, well, that's part of who I am or who my family was.
Absolutely. Bob Moore, God bless him. Bob and his wife both read an article about me in the Philadelphia Inquirer on the same day, separately, and said to each other, we need to do this for your mom, and we need to do this for the family. He got it. He did it.
Mm-hmm.
God bless him.
How long is one of your projects usually? Is this a several months investment? Is it a couple of weeks?
No,
or it varies?
It varies. I did one over the summer, and it's a simple Word document for a family. And I think I did 4 or 5 interviews once a week, an hour and a half with this woman. And it's interesting. The family wanted it as a Word document because they wanted to update the family history, and I was fine with that.
They could add
absolutely.
Add stuff.
Absolutely.
How much... You mentioned this phrase, we hear this a lot, clergy people hear this a lot when we are involved with a family, and a lot of times in pre-funeral planning, and you're talking to a family, that phrase, I really didn't know that, you know, after all these years, why am I only learning about the fact that you did this? How often have you run into that?
It happens all the time. Every memorial service that I go to where I haven't done a Capture Life Stories, I go, wow. I read the obituaries every day. I do. And I find out fascinating tidbits about people. Things that, you know, people don't know about until after it's too late. And it's too late to go back and ask them more about the happiest day of their life.
Mm-hmm. So you're... Your contact again. Mm-hmm. Tell us again.
It's CaptureLifeStories.com. That's www.CaptureLifeStories.com. CaptureLifeStories@gmail.com. And then 215-990-9317. 215-990-9317. And we should mention that we'll both be at the Sandwich Generation coming up.
Yeah, it's a program that we're doing in conjunction with the Buxmon Jewish Federation on October the 19th. Mm-hmm. You're going to be there. There's people who, it's at Beth Orr, this first launch at 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. At Congregation Beth Orr on Welsh Road in Maple Glen, Pennsylvania. There's going to be more information coming out about it. We'll have some PSAs on it. But again, this idea of telling one's story. Who's calling you the most? Is it the parents or their adult children?
It's the children. It's the children of the aging parents who are, I'm thinking of one right now, Natalie. Extensive family history. She couldn't keep the stories straight. Mom would tell them, but nobody was documenting them. Even I had problems because there were like John the first, second, third, and fourth within the family. And it was very detailed family history. So it was Natalie who said, I can't keep track of this. Can you please capture this for us? Mm-hmm. Because mom's getting older and I'm afraid we're going to lose it. I'm afraid we're going to lose it.
I've been fascinated by and dealing with families in these last couple of years whose parents, it's been mostly men who served in World War II.
Mm.
And I run across this with buddies of mine who served in Vietnam who just didn't want to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with some of these. I'm thinking mm-hmm. very, very closely mm-hmm. of a very close friend of mine whose dad, I did his funeral. And as I was working with the family at the end, the stories about him flying B-17s over Germany,
mm-hmm.
which was a suicide mission
mm-hmm.
in those, you know, for those days, came out mm-hmm. and quiet and unassuming. Mm-hmm. Have you run across this with people from that the so-called greatest generation in World War II who really were reluctant to talk about?
Absolutely, absolutely. I will actually have at the Sandwich Generation an oversized article that I did on my just turned 90-year-old neighbor who also was in that B-17.
Wow.
And he, I got all ready to capture his story, and I had done all this research on where he was, World War II, and I went in, and all he wanted to talk about was the horses. Riding in Devon, he did not want to talk about that. As a matter of fact, I pleaded with him to allow me to put one paragraph at the end of his life story about his storied military career.
And he didn't want you to do that?
He allowed me to do that in the final edit, to allow me to put one paragraph. It was probably a 2,500-word article, and there's probably 50 words about his.
So did you ask him why he didn't? And that's fascinating to me. I mean, why... He's a hero. I mean, these are heroic gestures.
I think there's a part of humility and humbleness about it. I think that there are difficult memories surrounding it. And he's moved on with his life, and his passion right now is riding horses. He's, at 90 years old, still riding carriages in the Devon Horse Show.
Good for him.
And that's what he wants to talk about. And that's, I allow you to talk about your story. I'm not going to push your story on you.
Mm-hmm.
If there's portions of your story, there's portions of my story I don't want out.
Right, right.
I've written my memoir. Portions of it will be published. Portions will not. So we all have had some difficulties in our life. Some people want to share that so others can learn from that, as I'm doing in this week's Chestnut Hill Local, about the fact that I was a teenage runaway.
I got to ask you this before we start running out of time. The telling of a story, how much of it is it a process of personal healing?
Absolutely. It's closure. It's closure. It's closure for me. That's mm-hmm. why I'm writing my story. It's closure for everybody who has gone through this process. Not all of the story, as I said, makes it into the final piece.
Right.
It's a therapy session. It's getting it out. It's acknowledging that I was hurt, that I was damaged, that I've moved on. And this is my legacy.
So there is a sense of personal or spiritual healing that takes place in telling this story?
Absolutely, absolutely. When you were asking my target audience really are the boomers, the sandwich generation for their parents, mm-hmm. The ministry, the spiritual community, because they clearly get it. As we spoke, you've done a eulogy for somebody that you've known and for somebody that you've not, mm-hmm. or whose story you've known or story you did not, and the difference that it made. And so you get it.
Mm-hmm.
You get it.
What's the number one question that you ask people when you sit down with a person? Do you have a trigger question to sort of like get them?
My trigger question is the trigger question that was for my dad. What was the happiest day of your life? Because people want to talk about the happy times.
Mm-hmm.
And then I might move into sadness, and that may or may not make it in there. But I usually open with, what was the happiest day of your life? And you're thinking about it right now, so go ahead, share.
No, I'm actually thinking about it's schedule.
Well, think about that.
I haven't had the happiest day of my life yet.
Yeah, and I put in parentheses the happiest day of your life left. So I encourage your listeners to think today, to maybe even write it down, what was the happiest day of your life so far?
Barbara Scherf from Capture Life Stories. Before we're out of time here, real fast, somebody wants to get in touch with you. How do they do that?
CaptureLifeStories.com, CaptureLifeStories@gmail.com, 215-990-9317, 215-990-9317.
And this Thursday, September 18th, you're going to be at the Chestnut Hill Center doing a
whole workshop called As You Wish. We're talking about writing your family a love letter while you're here and what you've learned in this life. And we're also putting some details together as a draft for your final story, your obituary.
Well, thank you, Barbara Scherf, for sharing your story and the stories of other people's, especially Lula. And thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank
you. Have a good one.
My
Keep
pleasure.
Telling those stories.
Thank you. I shall.
Telling one's story brings a lot of clarity, as we were just talking about, to, I guess, one's own family and spiritual center. And equally as important in many ways of seeking clarity is one's own financial planning. I want to remind you of a very good friend of the show, the Hecht Investment Group of Janie Montgomery Scott, which provides concierge financial consulting and planning services. The Hecht Investment Group, that's H-E-C-H-T, uses a formal investment process as their foundation, and clients receive frequent communication and rapid response to their questions. And as many of us know, there are few needs greater than our own when it comes to personal financial planning. The Hecht Investment Group provides experience, guidance, and an efficient management process that is important in today's environment. Contact the Hecht Investment Group toll-free at 855-289-2168. That's 855-289-2168. Or visit thehechtinvestmentgroup.com. The Hecht Investment Group is also on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. And Peter Hecht, as we are very happy to remind you, is recognized by Philadelphia Magazine and New Jersey Magazine as a 5-star wealth manager for 2013 and 2014. And Janie Montgomery Scott is a member of the New York Stock Exchange, FINRA, and the SIPC. And we're talking all day about stories with Barbara and with Steve coming up in a couple of minutes. And it really impacts our generation, the baby boomers, and how we're preparing and how we're dealing with our own families and our aging parents. And if you're listening to this program, you are more than likely a baby boomer with a young senior or a young senior. And thanks to another friend of the show's 50andbeyond.com for being the regional resource for baby boomers and the aging adult population. The 50andbeyond.com website simplifies the lives of baby boomers and seniors by providing the necessary information for those who are in the 50-plus age group. This information ranges from health and wellness, travel and beauty tips, healthcare information, living options such as in-home care services, assisted living and dementia care, to financial and legal information. 50andbeyond.com is a resource you will not want to be without. It is truly a one-stop shop where you can gather all the information you or your aging loved one will need for all the areas of your life. 50andbeyond.com is no longer just a website, but now has a regular bi-monthly printed edition, which is distributed across southern New Jersey. And you can visit 50andbeyond.com to download a digital copy. You can also go to the contact page on 50andbeyond.com. If you want a hard copy mailed directly to your door, you can put your mailing address in the message box. 50andbeyond.com is on top of today's issues and concerns for baby boomers and the aging adult population. We ask you to please visit 50andbeyond.com on a weekly basis to see the latest posted information that will surely be beneficial to all of you who are 50 and beyond. Welcome back to Boomer Generation Radio, coming to you again live from WWDB AM 860, streaming live on WWDBAM.com here in the Delaware Valley. And again, our contact information, if you want to contact the show, is boomergenerationradio@gmail.com. And hopefully, thanks to Tony and the miracle of electronics, we have Steve Zettler on the line. Steve, are you there?
I am indeed, yeah.
Hey, welcome. Welcome to Boomer Generation Radio. Thank you very much for calling in.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. We've been talking all morning so far about stories and individual stories. And it's just, I guess, kismet, or as we say, beshert, that your story and Barbara's involvement in telling people's stories just sort of like come together here on this particular show. Steve, your story is sort of like and some of the material that I was going over before the show, the Sunny Side of Life song from Monty Python.
I know it well.
Yes. So it's sort of like you said, that's sort of like your theme song, right?
Yeah, I'm still sort of trying to process what was the happiest day of my life. But anyway,
me too.
I have to give that some more thought. I had a lot of them, so anyway, lucky person to be where I am right now.
So your story, tell me a little bit. You've sort of like meandered through life in a very, very positive and powerful way, doing a lot of different things, and I guess that's why the Monty Python song is so, I guess, important to you.
And yeah, there's a bright side to being successful, but there's also kind of a bright side for not being so successful because you keep trying different things. So I've been trying different things for a long time.
Your beginning of that story, talk to me about Vietnam. You were in Nam, right?
I was, yeah. I went to Council Rock High School up in Bucks County. I graduated in 1965 and joined the Marine Corps when I was 18. And oddly, I did it with my best friend in high school. The two of us joined together, and he doesn't see it this way, but I always figured it as a way of sort of being able to duck going to Vietnam. this is how 18-year-olds think. The Marine Corps at that point had a 60-day delay program, meaning that you signed up and then you didn't have to go to boot camp for 60 days. Boot camp was 16 weeks long, 3 months or 4 months long. Then you went to infantry training for a month, and then because I was so smart, they would have clearly made me a jet mechanic or something like that. And by the time I went through all that training, the war in Vietnam would clearly be over with.
Right.
So that was my thinking. I did get the 60-day delay, so that was fine. But in the 60 days, the Marine Corps shortened boot camp to 8 weeks. So there were two of my months out the window. They shortened infantry training to 2 weeks, so there was another half a month gone there. And they made me a field radio operator. So that was 4 weeks of running up and down the hills of Southern California with a radio on your back just to be certain that you would be in good enough shape to carry that extra weight. And Yeah, I was in Vietnam less than 6 months after I showed up at Parris Island, so it was express train.
Were you in Camp Pendleton? Is that where you went?
I was, yeah, on the way over. I was at Parris Island and Camp Lejeune.
Oh, Parris Island. Oh, my God.
And Camp Pendleton on the way. They had a little thing they put you through called staging. It was 2 weeks of walking through the bushes and having other Marines jump out with blanks in their rifles and shooting you. And it was really kind of convince you that you were going to die over there without a doubt.
it was
kind of freaky, but anyway.
I have to ask you this question because I remember those days extremely well. What motivated you at 18 when you walked out of Council Rock to join the Marine Corps, knowing what was going on in 1965?
Well, I actually went to Clemson University for one semester. It's in South Carolina.
Right, right.
Believe it or not, 1965, the first Clemson, one of the state universities of South Carolina, in 1965 was the very first year that they integrated it. And I just didn't get along well down there.
No, I understand. So, believe me, I understand.
So I had a little delay in between joining the Marine Corps, but I was 17 when I went down to Clemson, then just turned 18 and got back and lost to my two S deferment.
Mm-hmm.
Went down to 401 North Broad in Philly for my physical. I wrestled in high school, so I was very good at losing weight. And I was 5'9", and got my weight down to about 115 pounds for the draft physical, and thought, well, there's no way they're going to take me. But, of course, that didn't work at all. So I was 1A, and I was going to be drafted. So my friend and I said, let's go join the Marine Corps. So we did. And as I said, my thinking was really that this was going to be the easiest way to be going to Vietnam.
Yes, well, many of us all have stories from those days associated with Vietnam, and even in the seminary, we had to get physicals for what was called the chaplaincy reserve. People now don't. The students I teach at the seminary, our seminary near, it's just like they don't even understand that. You mean you had to do that? I said, yeah. You know, we had a quota, and you had to fill the chaplaincy quota for the armed forces, and if you didn't volunteer, you had stood the possibility of being drafted, so you had to go through the physicals. And how much has that experience influenced you for the rest of your life?
Well, yeah, going back to always looking the bright side of life, I mean, I think I was I got down to Clemson, I was put it politely, badly behaved because of the situation down there. It really annoyed me. I grew up above my dad's restaurant and was basically raised by Dave Redding, who was African American. He was my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
I say, and got down south, and it was,
it's different. It was anyway. Different. People don't understand how different it was back then.
So I was really on a not a great track. So oddly, I think the Marine Corps really straightened me out. It made me grow up very, very quickly, and so I'm very appreciative of having one had that experience, and two being lucky enough to have come out the other end.
Absolutely,
both physically and. To a certain degree, mentally,
mm-hmm.
okay. One of the great advantages I had, because they got me over there so quickly, I was there for 17 months, and when I came back, I still had a year to do in the Marine Corps. And so I spent a year at Quantico with all radio operators in a communication company down there, and radio operators are a pretty irreverent group of people, and it was a real blessing. That was a blessing in disguise, as opposed to a lot of the veterans who, especially draftees, who were in for 2 years, they came back and were released into the real world immediately. And I don't think that was mentally healthy at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I was again, very, very fortunate to have had that year at Quantico and sort of hashed all this stuff out with a bunch of guys who had gone through the same thing.
We're talking with Steve Zettler here on Boomer Generation Radio on WWDB AM 860 in Philly and streaming live on WWDBAM.com. And a reminder that this portion of Boomer Generation Radio is being brought to you by Kendall Outreach, which serves the field of aging by raising public awareness and advocacy around important issues of older adults. Through education and training and comprehensive, safe, and individualized long-term care practices, Kendall Outreach has been sharing Kendall's approach to quality care with consumers, advocates, providers, government agencies, and related organizations since 1989. And to learn more, visit kendall.org, that's K-E-N-D-A-L.org, and click on Outreach. Steven Zettler, novelist, an actor, and Philadelphia tour guide, and just reminiscing about, again, the theme of today, stories, individual stories. You wound up in L.A. doing your acting, correct?
I did. When I got out of the Marine Corps, I moved to New York City. I studied photography at the New York Institute of Photography, and then I worked as a photographer. I ended up taking photographs, doing actors' headshots and photographs of shows, and got them to look at people who were up on stage and said, hey, let me give this a try. So I did, and it went well for me in New York. I was in the original cast of Soldier's Play, which was written by Charles Fuller from Philadelphia, and won a Pulitzer Prize in 1982. So I had some successes, and then my wife and I moved out to Los Angeles and did that L.A. thing for 7 years. Worked on. I never get a running part in a show, and there gets to be a point where you either have made it or you haven't made it. So it sort of ran its course. My wife Cordelia Biddle just finished up her first novel, and you know, it's just very, things happen very serendipitously. The woman who sat next to us at church was Charlton Heston's personal secretary, and Cordelia was having a little trouble getting representation for her novel. And this woman said, we'll just have the boss, meaning Charlton Heston, send it off to his editor in New York, who was Michael Korda, and went to one of his associates, and they loved it, and they bought her novel, which then he said, you need an agent. So she was then sent to Irving Lazar, but Swifty Lazar.
Wow.
And so that was her agent. And then as I was sort of getting frustrated with the acting business, I started writing as well. And so I then finished my first novel and gave it to one of Irving's associates. And he liked it and sent it off. And so that started a whole new...
Wow.
Whole new... So very lucky, because I think it's very, again, look at the bright side of life. These things don't happen any longer in the publishing business. It's a tough grind out there for people trying to get their work read, and with e-books and everything, which is wonderful, but it's very hard to publicize yourself or get yourself known as the independent bookstores drying up.
I guess it helps to have Moses representing you.
Exactly.
Opens a lot of doors.
Yeah.
Well, not too bad.
He was wonderful. He would come to, we went to St. Matthew's Church in Los Angeles, an Episcopal church.
And, right.
He would come, Charlton Heston would come two or three times a year and read the lessons. And it was, you had Moses up there. What could go wrong, you know? It was...
You shocked a lot of people that Moses is an Episcopalian, by
exactly,
the way.
Exactly, exactly. Very, 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 very nice.
You know, rewrite
man,
a lot of books.
Nice man. You know, not to even get into any politics.
So no,
very, very, very nice guy, and very generous, and we weren't certainly on the same side of the political fence, but really, he did a lot of wonderful things for the arts and everything else, so...
So one of the things that you sent in preparation for the and for our conversation about your story is that, you felt it bizarre to be, quote, shot at for 17 months. What did that mean?
Well, I
is this the Marine thing?
I was shot at for 17 months.
Right.
What could I say? I was always within artillery range of North Vietnam, so we were shot at quite often, and it would get to be a point where you'd start laughing about it.
Right.
You know, say, I remember the first time I realized someone was actually trying to specifically kill me. I thought it was. I just started laughing. I thought, these guys are wasting a tremendous amount of money trying to kill me, because I was sitting on top of a bunker about 1,500 meters south of the demilitarized zone, trying to get a tan, and you could actually. I think what you heard, somebody explained to me, that what you'd hear is the artillery rounds. You wouldn't actually hear the gun go off. You'd hear that what you heard was the artillery round breaking the sound barrier.
Right.
And it would send a little pop. So you had about 4 or 5 seconds to get somewhere before the round would impact. And believe me, you can cover an awful lot of ground in 5 seconds.
Yeah, if somebody's trying to kill you, I imagine.
Exactly.
Wouldn't they?
But I was sitting there trying to get a tan, and I heard these little pops go off, and I thought, oh, my God, they're actually specifically trying to kill me. Anyway, I thought it was pretty funny.
It sounds like it's almost like a scene from MASH, with sitting on the top of the bunker getting a tan, and the war intervenes.
Yeah, these guys just blew $6,000 trying to kill one dumb Marine.
The books that you write, talk to me about this part of your story, that you became an author, you're writing books. What's your focus, Steve?
My first three books were thrillers, and all came out in paperback, so they did not get a hardbound release, but they did pretty well. And then my wife Cordelia and I wanted to write something together, so we'd always sit down at lunch and place the New York Times crossword puzzle between us, and work on that while we were having lunch. And she was never a big fan of Will Shortz, who took over from Eugene Mileska at the time. So, and this was years ago, like 92 or something. So we were doing this. We were always trying to figure out what we could write together. We were thinking travel book, cookbook, whatever. And she got so frustrated with the puzzle one day, she threw down the pen and said, somebody should just kill this guy. And this little light bulb went off above our heads, and why don't we write a mystery series where somebody kills a crossword puzzle editor, and the detectives, our detective, in order to figure out who might want to kill a crossword puzzle editor, interviews another crossword puzzle editor, who of course is a babe, so the two of them hook up, and that was what then we ended up writing together. We wrote 12 books in what was a crossword puzzle mystery series.
Wow. And are you still writing them?
We aren't. Cordelia's has... I've always had this thing. There's a number of artistic careers as a photographer, an actor, and a writer. And I always start out very excited. But then once I get to a point where I'm only doing it just to earn a living, I sour on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just my personality, I guess. I don't know. So that's why I keep moving on, I think. So I haven't written anything in 4 or 5 years, but Cordelia's writing still a mystery series set in Philadelphia in the 1830s, and Martha Beale series, and she just finished a biography of St. Catherine Drexel, the first person born in this country made a saint by the Catholic Church. So she's still writing, but I have not been writing, and I've been, as you mentioned, now tour guiding, dressing up in colonial costume and taking fifth graders around the historic area, which is a lot of fun.
Really? What was the motivating factor for this part of your life right now?
Mortgage payment.
Ah, that's that helps a lot.
the
old economic necessity.
I was not writing, and I did not don't make a killing off of tour guiding, that's for sure. But anyway, it's
if
fun.
You did,
it's
that's another book series.
And I you know, I may do it for adults as well, but I like doing it for school children.
So also because for those of you who are not in Philly, there being a very historic town, you can walk down the old city in the historic area. You'll see Benjamin Franklin. You'll see all kinds of people dressed up. And you're one of those. Do you dress up in colonial costume?
I do. Yeah. And it's walk past. We actually don't live that far from Independence Hall, but you know, walk by it each day, and there's just some. It's really earth-shattering what happened in that building in 1776. It really is. I mean, it really changed the entire course of world history. Democracy. What an interesting thing.
Did you get the sense that the kids really have an understanding of this, or is it just a field trip for school and let's have some fun?
That's what I said. Fifth graders are the best. They are just sponges. They love this stuff. They're totally on board and fascinated by everything. Kids get a little older. It depends on who the teacher is. If they're 11th graders and they're allowed to pull out their iPhones, text, and then it's a little harder to get their attention. I think it's probably indicative of the school that takes the time to bring their kids in, be them seniors from the Bronx or fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth graders, whatever, that the parents who have taken the time to put their kids in a school that will bring them to Philadelphia and show them this sort of thing makes just I think just by the way that they were raised and everything else that they are much more willing to and anxious to listen to this stuff. So it's I think you get sort of that background and it's not like some other schools that aren't they don't think it's time to bring the kids in then.
Right.
Anyway.
We're talking with Steve Zettler, a novelist, actor, and as we're just finding out, Philadelphia tour guide here on Boomer Generation Radio. And as we're beginning to run out of time, I just want to remind all of you that this portion of Boomer Generation Radio has been brought to you by Kendall, a system of not-for-profit communities and services in 8 states that advocates for and empowers older adults to reach their full potential. Please join us together, transforming the experience of aging. And to learn more about this transformation, we invite you to visit Kendall. That's K-E-N-D-A-L. And you can visit them at www.discoverkendall.org. And again, the toll-free number is 888-759-0128. Steve, this rather interesting and fascinating story that you've just shared with us from, Bucks County to Vietnam to Quantico to Clemson to New York to back to Los Angeles and the West Coast back to Philadelphia and always looking on the bright side of life. What in the 1 or 2 minutes we have left, looking backward, what's been the most exciting part of this journey for you? What's been the most exciting quote job unquote?
It's everything. It's always like what I'm doing now is the most exciting. I think the other than meeting and marrying my wife, which was a great blessing. I think the most exciting thing that really is when I got the. When I was doing a soldier's play in New York City, and the director called me and said the play just won the Pulitzer Prize. That was really exciting. That was really, really exciting. That's not
going to say. No. I mean that play itself, and to be on, yeah. I mean to be on Broadway in a straight play that wins the Pulitzer has to be like overwhelming.
Yeah.
Who were you on stage with then?
Part of the original cast was Denzel Washington, Samuel L. Jackson. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the play, it's 9 African American actors and 3 white actors. So Denzel Washington, Samuel L. Jackson, James Pickens Jr., who is now on Grey's Anatomy. I don't know if that's still on air. Anyway, he was. Steve Jones, who is now head of the ACT theater in San Francisco, Brent Jennings, everybody has gone on to far more successful.
Do you ever keep in touch with them? Do you ever?
I do. Facebook kind of thing. More so with Sam Jackson and Denzel. When we lived in Los Angeles, we all,
hung out.
My stepson Christian played basketball with him over at Denzel's house.
That's not bad. You're hanging out with the good peeps from Moses to Denzel and everything else. Yeah. Listen, Steve, thank you very, very much. We're just out of time here on Boomer Generation Radio. Thank you very much for sharing your story and with Barbara on her story. And, we wish you have a great week, and take care of everyone. And we'll see you here next week, same time, WWDB AM 860, another edition of Boomer Generation Radio next Tuesday, 10 a.m. Have a great week. Stay healthy, everybody.